So many Jewish conceptions of the afterlife, and I gave a composite conception in a class recently, sort of like the train station, where you wait at the platform, and in a dreamlike way you ascend a ladder, and then at the top of the ladder is the Grand Academy, the Yeshiva Shel Mala, the High Academy, where God teaches Torah, and if you are fortunate enough to have lived a righteous life, you will have a good audience to hear the secrets of the world. An earlier conception, as appears in the book of Genesis, is a place called Sheol, which to me I think shares a lot in common with Hades and Styx. Sheol, what little we understand of it, is a place of silence, a place where one is no longer permitted human intercourse, conversation. I've been reflecting on the power of silence and the need for silence and inwardness, more generally, in a religious life, in a spiritual life, and in a prayerful life. Jacob's heart, on learning of the events of Benjamin and Joseph, goes numb. And later on in Leviticus, we talk about Aaron remaining silent in the face of fear and trembling. The power of containing our words, the power of resting in quiet contemplation, I think is something that's not lost on our tradition. I want to focus almost exclusively on one verse in this week's parasha. It's chapter 46, verse 29, 46:29, if you want to follow along, but I'll read it to you. Ve'esor Yosef merkavto ve'yal likrat Yisrael aviv goshna ve'yira alav ve'yipol al tzavaro ve'yevk. I'll give you a rough translation because I want to leave so much unsaid so we can digest and dissect. Joseph made ready his chariot and went up towards Israel. This is at the point of their reunion. His father, who was towards Goshen, and saw him and fell upon his neck and cried a good long while on his neck. But the three concepts that our sages take issue implies a negativity, but take issue, take interest in our vaya esor, to gather, to tie up, to rein in his chariot, vayipol, to fall on Joseph's neck, Jacob's neck, vayevk, and to cry. So I want to talk about vaya esor. So the Kedushat Levi, Reb Levi Yitzhak of Berdichev, who was a 18th century Hasidic master, talks about this word vayesor as harnessing his body, wrapping himself up. It's a word just used to describe wrapping up a prisoner also. And not just harnessing his chariot, but harnessing himself in preparation for meeting his father. So this wonderful concept we don't talk about very much called Mesirat Nefesh, which is largely a Musar, which is the ethical movement of the 19th century Lithuania, a Musar ethical term, but it exists long before. So sort of binding one's soul, preparing oneself, gathering oneself together tightly in preparation for an encounter with the Almighty. It's cool, sound effects. It's like I have a Foley guy back here. Mesirat Nefesh is sort of afflicting oneself, tying oneself together, binding oneself up tightly in preparation for arranging and greeting the Almighty, the Master of Masters. So I've been making tentative first steps at doing Daf Yomi, and I just read a very interesting comment in Masechet Brachot in the section largely about prayer, which is that you can't pray if you're not ready. And it were better to pray a much abbreviated prayer than to pray a full Amidah if you're not prepared. I don't think it's codified in later law codes, but it's an interesting stream of thought that puts intention and readiness, spiritual preparedness, higher than the religious rite of prayer, which I think is a very interesting counter-tradition. But the idea of misirat nefesh, of gathering one's soul and spirit together in preparation to pray, it's a very powerful one. And it aims, I think, squarely at the tradition or the tension between spiritual and religious. You know, Heschel talks about this, the tension between religious observance and the inwardness and the kavanah, the orientation that it requires. And this tension about prayer is really curiously raised in that same verse. So the next is that he fell upon Jacob's neck, Ipol al Tzavaro. And the sages note that Jacob, there's no counteraction. Jacob, it's as if the son leans in and starts crying, but Jacob doesn't embrace him and also cry. Maybe just an omission. We're supposed to assume that they are weeping and sharing together. But our sages notice it, and they say, through Rashi and others, why doesn't Jacob cry? The midrash they make is that he was saying the Shema. Not just that it was the time to say the Shema, which we'll get to, but that he was saying the Shema. One of the most cardinal of the prayer commandments, the recitation of the Shema and its paragraphs, morning and evening. Something that is an inevitable part of Jewish life all days. But he didn't do it just because it was time, according to many of the traditions. One of the Hasidic traditions says that he knew that whole b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, b'chol me'odecha, with all of oneself, with all of one's resources, putting one's whole heart and spirit into it, there's a recognition that that's very hard. And that Jacob realized at this moment of his reunion with his beloved, feared, lost son, the single pinnacle moment at which he could achieve that sort of sincerity of complete devotion, of complete misrat nefesh, of complete attentiveness to the words of the Shema, because at that moment, he really was embraced by and overwhelmed by love for his creator with all his heart, spirit, and wherewithal.
Wouldn't he be talking to himself? Shema Yisrael?
It's very awkward, yeah. Thank you. Well, some congregations, you have a lot of dumb congregants. It's different set of problems. Don't put out the point out the flaws in your logic as often. Yes. Yeah. The moment